Blog Talk Radio.
All right, now, what happened there? Okay, so today's episode is actually we're going to be talking about foreign exchange trade. We're going to learn what is Forex. We're going to cover who trades Forex, when can I trade Forex, where can you, or why should you trade Forex, and what are the currency pairs? We only have about 45 minutes, 43 minutes now. We're going to see if we can all squeeze in you know, all the time that we have. So let's start by reading about what is Forex. So Forex, often abbreviated FX, is an acronym short for foreign exchange and is by far the largest financial market in the entire world. So the Forex market sees roughly $5 trillion U.S. dollars of trade volume. That's on a daily basis. Now compare that to the stock market, which only sees roughly $20 billion U.S. dollars of trade. It's a trade volume on any given day. Forex actually is a trading or exchanging of different countries' currencies. So you will also commonly see various currencies exchanged for commodities or cryptocurrencies. And these exchanges are also included under the umbrella and the umbrella of the foreign exchange markets. Many people participate in the Forex markets without realizing it, really. So when you travel to another country, excuse me, you must exchange your native currency for the currency of the countries you are visiting. The country you're visiting and the current exchange rate so that you may purchase goods and services while you are there. So when you are ready to return home, you will have to exchange the currency back again to, you know, U.S. dollars if you're in the United States. But this time, it will be in a different exchange rate. See, so that you return with your native currency. See what I mean? That's what it means. So let's cover who trades in Forex market. The foreign exchange market is comprised of many different participants. The major banks are the very top and control most of the trade volume. These major banks trade currency directly amongst one another via two special electronic networks at special pricing that aren't available to the public, say, also known as retail traders. So that's via RD3-SM and EBS. We'll learn more of that later. All other banks come next in terms of trade volume. And then these smaller banks are followed by institutional investors, brokers, and all of that. So finally, at the very bottom of the totem pole, you will have your retail traders. Retail traders trade the foreign exchange market through various trading platforms, accessible via their computers, smartphones, or tablets, anything like that. These trading platforms are connected to the retail ECNs, so that's electronic communication networks. which are otherwise known as brokers. And we will talk more about brokers and trading platforms later on. So there's a diagram which depicts the various market participants and the overall volume of trading that they contribute. So it's like an upside down pyramid. That's what it looks like. At the top, you will note the major banks are responsible for the most trading volume in the Forex market. So you have a piece in this as major banks. You will also see how you're going to see how just small the contribution is from all the retail traders in the world. Relatively, retail trades is like in the bottom. It's like an upside down pyramid. So who trades Forex? Individuals. So with discussed an example of how regular and average people participate in forex markets throughout their entire lifetime. While many individuals only exchange currencies when traveling, there are some who trade currency to turn profit. So you will often hear these people referred to as a retail traders. It is estimated that retail traders only account for the overall trade volume in a foreign exchange market. So, those are the individuals. Corporations. Large companies trade quite often in foreign exchange markets. Their participation has substantially increased over the previous years, as we have seen a rise in international business and widespread adoption of more often open global economic policies. So, in fact, it's not uncommon for a large corporation to reference and analyze the exchange rate for goods and services before carrying out transactions. Get that? Now, let's go to the banks. So banks average combine to account for more trading volume in a foreign exchange market than any other entity. Most of these exchanges take place in an interbank market where banks conduct currency exchange in one another electronically. There are many reasons why a bank participates in the forex market. But note that your bank does also trade your money in a forex market for financial gain. Yes, they do. Institutional investors. They're the one that they also trade forex. And another significant source of transactions in the forex markets, institutional investors such as hedge funds. They control substantial equity in the private sector and typically carry out a sizable portion of their portfolio's position in a forex market. So get that, note that. Government. Typically, governments participate in and influence foreign exchange markets via entities called central banks. Central banks have an incredible influence in a forex market as they control the nation's interest rates, which directly impacts supply and demand for a currency and therefore that currency exchange rate. So, these central bank entities also employ impactful economic tactics to stabilize their respective currency between a constant inflation. So, recession continuum. As you can see, there are quite a bit of participants in the foreign exchange markets. Those are the governments, institutional investors, banks, corporations, and down to individuals. Right? So they contribute to an incredible amount of money being traded on any given day. So we'll go into a further detail regarding all these market participants and overall structures of the foreign exchange market in later sections. So retail trader. So in the past, the Forex markets weren't very accessible for average individual traders. However, the world is changing. It is changing fast. Globalization, technology advancements, economic and financial fundamental changes in societies, an overall shift in the way people are living their lives have opened up access to and increased the popularity of retail trading. So understanding the overall structure of Forex financial markets will significantly help you as you learn technical analysis and begin trading. So this elements was designed to provide you with an introduction to Forex and the necessary foundation to begin your trading. So, what can I trade Forex? So, what can you trade Forex? Let's look into market hours. The exact opening and closing times of the foreign exchange market is always slightly shifting due to daylight saving time, DST. But there's a template that you can find for public market participation hours. And there's a time that listed there for, you know, CST, Central Standard Time, and it will need to be converted to the time zone that is relevant to you. So keep an eye on those forward markets hours. So Sunday, Forex markets open at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. Monday, that's what Forex markets open. Tuesdays open, Wednesdays open, Thursdays open. Now Friday, Forex market closes at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. So the whole, and also the whole Saturday, Forex markets closed. So interestingly, the foreign exchange market never actually truly closes. It runs 24/7 worldwide. Now, however, retail traders' access to the foreign exchange market is limited to traditional business hours, because that is when the retail brokers make trading available to clients. So thankfully, we don't lose the full weekend because this is a worldwide calculation. So for example, let's say that you're a trader in the United States. Business hours are typically Monday to Friday, correct? 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. However, the Forex markets opens for you at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time on Sunday, because that's equivalent to Monday morning at 8 a.m. in Sydney, Australia. So one of the powerhouse trading markets hubs in the world, also interesting to note, is the fact that while the foreign exchange market may be tied to the worldwide business hours, that does not necessarily mean that all markets are. An example, many retail brokers that offer the ability to trade cryptocurrency allow retail client access to trade those assets 24/7. Another great example to note is the U.S. stock market, which operates only Monday to Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, regardless of the business hours in other time zones around the world. So the foreign exchange markets are basically open for trading all day and night during the week, and then shuts down for a bit during the weekends. So let's take a closer look. Now we go into the trade sessions. Where am I at? There you go. Set. Yes, the foreign exchange markets are almost always open for us to trade. And no, that does not mean that we should be trading these markets at all times. So the foreign exchange market can be broken into four main sessions, and all be listed in Central Standard Time. So here in Europe, European, let's say London, 2 a.m. Central Standard Time through 11 a.m. Central Standard Time. You go into the United States, that's New York, 7 a.m. Central Standard Time through 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you go to Australia and Sydney, 3 p.m. Central Standard Time through 12 a.m. Central Standard Time. Now you go to Asia, let's say Tokyo, 5 p.m. Central Standard Time through 2 a.m. Central Standard Time. So let's look at the breakdown. I'm going to tell you the breakdown of the market volatility during each of these sessions. So as you can, there is substantially more price movement in London and New York session. So your goal as traders to successfully capitalize on price fluctuations, which means you are seeking at least some level of price volatility. So during the hours of 7 a.m. Central Standard Time through 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, for example, both the U.S. and European sessions are active on those hours. So that means that all the banks, corporations, institutions, ECN brokers, retail traders, and all of that, these two powerhouse economies are carrying out the business. So it'll be the U.S. and the European, right? So they're conducting currency exchanges and reacting to fundamental factors that determine price valuation. All of this activity breeds significantly opportunity to capitalize on price movements. So in contrast, the Asian and Australian sessions typically give rise to lower volatility, and so you may see overall price consolidation across all major financial instruments. So during these hours, especially relative to the sharp, substantial trends that often develop in the European and United States sessions. Using this principle, or using the same principles, you can also start to build an understanding of what market condition and circumstances would present less than ideal trading condition. So holidays, they have less financial transaction taking place, especially it has something to do with the bank holidays. Market opens, less financial transaction taking place, many markets in business yet, because only part of the global market is open for business. When a market closes, less financial transaction taking place. Many market participants aren't conducting businesses late in a week because only a small portion of the global market is still open for business. This are all principles you should use to help guide you when you trade the Forex markets. However, as you may have noticed, there isn't much downtime when it comes to the market availability. So that most important factor at the end of the day is your schedule. Let's go through to when can I trade Forex. Well, that was a when can I do. Well, why should you trade Forex? So why become a trader? So the journey to become a successful trader will be challenging, and it's important that you're able to remember why you're motivated to complete that journey. First, money. So, each individual has their own reasoning for pushing trading or pursuing trading. But the financial incentive is the most common motivator. Trading offers a solution for all type of financial desire by offering an opportunity that allows you to simply make an extra part-time income around 9-to-5 job, right? This is around your 9-to-5 job. Or even create a full-time income, which allows you the options of quitting your full-time 9-to-5 job and work from home. The skill of trading can be truly life-changing, but it's also a very challenging skill set. It requires significant equity, and you could take as little as 3 months or as long as 10 years to truly master, depending on the person. Why become a trader? Time freedom. An incredible benefit of being able to call yourself a successful trader is that you can earn money from anywhere in the world as long as you have a internet or Wi-Fi. You can trade from the beach while on vacation and cover the cost of vacation while you're laying out in the sand. You can trade from home while spending time with your family. You can trade while you're on an airplane, in the car, or even on your yacht. So, why become a trader? Number three, ego. So let's be honest. Many traders pursue trading because they want the status that is associated with being a successful trader. There's something that can be said for consistently winning trades. Studies have shown that the feeling of winning produces natural dopamine highs in the brain, which lead to feelings of addiction and increased passion. So there's actually a biological basis for this motivation. Winning. Last one is legacy. legacy, there's a popular monetary theory that states if you take the money from the top 5% of the wealthiest people on earth and disperse it to the other 95%, that money will make its way back in the hands of the original 5%. The idea is that wealth is an accumulation of passed down business opportunity and intellectual property through successful genealogies. The skill set of trading falls into this category. So trading is a concept, conceptual smarter. The world operates based on a concept of trading time in exchange for money because of society's employment model. So trading works in a fundamentally different way by allowing you to trade money for money instead. This is the same principle that powers the world of investing, which is the golden goose of nearly of all the wealthy elite. What are the currency pairs? We only have about 20 minutes into our podcast. So, what are the currency pairs? In the financial markets, almost all assets carry and associated abbreviations, as you can see. For example, you may see the company's Microsoft abbreviated as MSFT in the stock markets, or you may see the metal gold abbreviated as XAU in the commodity markets. The same principles apply to the foreign exchange market. In the world of Forex, all currency are abbreviated, and you will need to know, understand this abbreviation like the back of your hand. Here are some, I'm going to tell you about some of the examples. Okay, USD, that would be the US dollar. EUR would be the euro. KAD is the Canadian dollar. JPY would be the Japanese yen. GBP, Great British pound. AUD, Australian dollar. CHF, Swiss francs. NZD is New Zealand dollar, and MXN would be the Mexican peso. So you will notice that the first two letters in the currency abbreviated tend to stand for the country that the currency is associated with. And the third letter typically stands for the name of the currency itself, though it may not be always applied. So example, the USD is the US stands for United States, and D is for dollar, so on and so forth. So additionally, experienced traders who are fluent in foreign terminology would frequently abbreviate in currency pair using the first letter of each pair. For example, EUR / USD will be referred to as simply as EU or USD / JPY will be referred to simply as UJ. Make sense? So currency pairing. By its very definitions, you trade something, you are exchanging one item for another. In Forex, you're usually trading one currency for another currency, though sometimes you may be trading a currency for another asset such as commodity. Therefore, you'll note that currency exchange rates are given only for currency pairs. Let me give you an example. Example, let's say that you are visiting the United States and you need to buy U.S. dollars. You will exchange for something, purchase those U.S. dollars using your native country's currency. Like, let's say you came from the Philippines, you would have to exchange that for the dollars for the market value. So likewise, when you want to sell those U.S. dollars back because you are returning home, you are simultaneously buying your currency in exchange. The same principle applies when you're looking to make money or by buying or selling currency based on your belief that its value will rise or fall. So you must trade a pairing. So don't get overwhelmed about the amount of abbreviation you need to have to memorize, because while there are well over 100 currency pairs available to trade at any given time, a small group of 7 pairs make up about 80% of all this trade volume. So these 7 currency pairs are referred to as the majors. Number one is the EUR / USD, GBP USD, AUD USD, NZDUSD, USD/CHF, USD/JPY, USD/CAD. Among the majors, so-called EUR, USD, is by far the most traded currency pair in the world, accounting for roughly, at this, 30% of all trade volume in the foreign exchange market. One thing you'll notice about the most heavily traded forex pairs is that they all include the U.S. dollars. So you will learn more about why this currency and this associated major currency pairs encompass so much of the overall trade volume later. So, but for now, it is just important to be able to recognize the significant currency so that you can begin trading. So the minors, in addition to the major, there's another slightly larger group of currency pairs that make up an additional 15% of all trading volume in the forex market. These currency pairs are correspondingly referred to as minors, so as opposed to majors, as I discuss earlier. Sorry. So you might also hear these currency pairs referred to as cross pairs. And this is because they're defining characteristics that they are currency pairings that do not include the central U.S. dollar. Instead, these pairs are crossed between other major currencies such as EUR, JPY, GP, GBP, AUD, CHF, NZD, CAD, and so on. For example, EUR/JPY is a minor or cross currency pair because it includes significant currency, but not the U.S. dollar. So, there's another one called pairs of exotics. In addition to the majors and the minors, the final group called the exotics. They contribute the remaining 5% of trading volume in a foreign exchange market. And some of these example pairs are the USD/AFN, which is AFN, so Afghanistan, USD/TRY, Turkish New Lira, USD/IQD, which is Iraqi dinar, USDWST, which is Samoan Tala, USD/EGP, which is Egyptian pound. The defining characteristic of an exotic currency pair is that you have a major currency. It can be any major currency. Doesn't have to be a U.S. dollar. Before that, and be paired with the currency of a developing, relatively smaller and is insignificant nation economically. This currency, as their name implies, aren't trading very often for this very reason. We don't recommend trading any exotic pairs as a newbie trader because there are higher costs associated with trading them to increase transactions rate, and because they are lower liquidity level and give way to more volatile exchange rate. So those are the currency pairs. So we got 15 minutes to go. We'll go into what is crypto. So the crypto. In a world that has been largely dominated by only fiat currencies since the 20th century, it's easy to lose track of what exactly a currency is and what form it may take. Over time, the accepted definition of an idea of a currency has taken many different forms. For example, if you look far into the past before the human race becomes so civilized, you'll see that currency was in fact simply various day-to-day needs. Individuals may have traded weapons, for example, a bow from one village with a spear to another, food, crops, dairy, meat, fish, etc., or natural resources, which is stone, wool, fur, woods, etc. They'd also do crafts or more. Thinkingly, these resources were valid currency of exchange during those times. As time went on and the human race continued to evolve, societal shifts led to further reliance on others and increased need to trade, which has led to an ever-evolving idea on what constitutes of what we call now currency. For thousands of years, governmental entities have implemented and controlled societies' accepted forms of currency, which has led to common adoption. The ability for large-scale trade and globalization and higher functioning societies, even on a microeconomic level. So these types of currencies are referred to as fiat currency. Each government entity, which usually represents a country, though some local governments don't follow this structure, has a central bank that regulates their fiat currency. Each central bank regulates aspects such as how much currency an individual can send. When an individual can send it, the tracking of currency transactions, how much currency to pump into the economies, and more. Current examples of fiat currency include the U.S. dollar, the Japanese yen, the Great Britain pound, and the Canadian dollar, etc. So while common perception is that fiat currency is intrinsically valuable, you may be surprised to learn that this isn't the case. So let's take, for example, the most popular fiat currency, the U.S. dollars. The U.S. dollar was that for every note of U.S. dollar bill you possess, you are guaranteed an equivalent exchange into gold, which has intrinsic value. Keep an eye on that, intrinsic value. So, however, this all changed in 1971 when President Nixon established his new economic policy, which brought an end to the Bretton Woods system and fixed exchange rate that was established after World War II. During this time, Nixon suspended the U.S. dollar's convertibility into gold, an event also known as the Nixon shock. After the Nixon shock, it was not long before the U.S. dollar began to plummet in value. In March of 1973, the GT approved an arrangement where six members of the European community tied their currency together and jointly floated against the U.S. dollar. This was a decision that effectively signaled abandonment of the Bretton Woods fixed exchange rate system of fiat currency that has been in place in favor of the current system of floating exchange rate. So, what is the conclusions of this historical timeline? The conclusion is that the fiat currencies in circulation in our global monetary system today are essentially backed by nothing of true value. Rather, their value is based solely on the merit of the governing entities, regulations, and societal adaptations. In other words, fiat currencies are only valuable because the government says so. So this isn't to say that having a fiat currency is necessarily worse than having a commodity-backed currency. In fact, there are many sound reasons why society has shifted to fiat currency. One very important reason is that central banks can control supply and demand of currency by influencing interest rates and currency circulation volume, which allows government to mitigate and better control economic shifts, which may otherwise drastically negative impact particular economy. This very pro for fiat currency was displayed fairly evidently in the U.S. financial crisis of 2008, when the Federal Reserve was able to do economic damage control by controlling the supply of the U.S. dollar in circulation. Such control is not permitted by the commodity-backed currency in history, especially when considering the relative instability of commodity values themselves. At the beginning of these lessons, we asked the simple questions. What is currency? Currency is simply any accepted medium of exchange between individuals. It's a very broad term. And hopefully, now that you have better understanding of this broad concept and understand how or just how many different forms of currency can actually take, this understanding lead us to the introduction of cryptocurrency, which is a new currency concept that disrupt society's currently accepted idea of fiat currency. So cryptocurrency is an internet-based medium of exchange which uses cryptographical functions to conduct financial transactions. Cryptocurrencies leverage blockchain technology to gain decentralization, transparency, and immutability. But take this note that The currency can be traded in the Forex market, as well as invested in long term by actually buying and holding. So the most important feature of the cryptocurrency is that it is not controlled by any central authority. Rather, the decentralized nature of the blockchains make cryptocurrency theoretically immune to the old ways of government controls and interference. So cryptocurrency can be sent directly between two parties via the use of private and public keys. Note that some of the following additional touted theoretical benefits of cryptocurrency relative to fiat currency. So one of them is a no fund transfer limit, and it also has funds security and no central point of failure. Little to no transaction cost. We have 24/7 access, and virtually anyone can use it. International transactions are much faster. Today's societies as a whole brings forth quite a bit of skepticism regarding cryptocurrency. It is a place as a true sustainable currency that may replace fiat currency. One common argument against adoption of cryptocurrency as a mainstream vessel of exchange is that it holds no real value, they said, which is exaggerated by the fact that cryptocurrency is not a physical object that you can hold, such as a US dollar bill. However, it is not being able to tangibly hold a currency that gives said currency value. It's whether or not it's accepted by the others for exchange. Additionally, as we provisionally discussed, the same argument in regards to not being backed by an intrinsic value can be made for today's fiat currency, as well as since commodity-backed currency is already a thing of the past. So one of the most stark important differences between cryptocurrency and fiat currency is this. Cryptocurrencies are completely decentralized. This means that there is no government involvement and there is no central point of failure. For example, banks. Imagine a currency that cannot be seized or frozen by a regulatory entity. So you can send and receive money to and whoever you want, whenever you want, in any amount you like, and it's just a matter of minutes or even seconds. The power of control over the individual currency and by extension their assets, it's swayed from the regulation back into the hands of you, the individual. Note that not all cryptocurrencies are actually decentralized, but for learning purposes, this general understanding will suffice. Centralized cryptocurrency are outside the scope of an introductory foundation. So cryptocurrency are shaking up the foundation of the current monetary system in big way. Though interestingly enough, the concept isn't too far-fetched from the central bank system already being used. Systems have been put in place to allow the exchanging of different currency via electronic networks. Think just making a purchase online, just like that, using credit cards and electronic banking through mobile phones, mobile apps, such as PayPal, Cash App, Venmo. You can even cash checks right from your phone. So the number of cash transactions have dwindled down over the past few decades, and experts predict that cash transactions will continue to do so as we progress as society and technology continue in advancement. How different is the idea of cryptocurrency really when you consider that most people already keep their money in a bank, which is displayed in monetary value in their cash and digital numbers of ones and tens or zeros? The current monetary system is already set up digitally, and this is a perfect precursor for advancement of the monetary system that leaves physical currency in the past. So some countries actually have already started to develop their own cryptocurrency by using the blockchain technology. To many observers, this seems to be a desperate attempt from centralized system to keep up with the sudden adoptions of cryptocurrency on a mass scale and maintain their control over currency exchange on an aggregate level. Understand, of course, that regulatory entities such as governments, banks, etc., do not want to lose their control over the monetary system that they currently use to effectively control society. So no, these centralized entities have been seeking to implement cryptocurrency as a centralized digital currency, which negates one of the biggest you can say in some ways, benefits of cryptocurrency as they recently adopted. So those are the explanations on cryptocurrency. So I only have 5 minutes, less than 5 minutes. Let's cover what is blockchain. We mentioned earlier about blockchains, and when we are referring to the cryptocurrency, blockchain is simply, it's just a database that is shared across network of computers. And I'll tell you and how it actually works. So number one, a trade is recorded. For example, let's say one individual is selling 10 of his or her cryptocurrency coins to another individual for $1,000. The trade will be recorded and the record will list the details, including the digital signature from each party. Number two, the record is checked by the network. The computers in the network, called nodes, check the details of a trade to make sure is valid. So the records that the network accepts as valid are added to a block. So each block contains a unique code called a hash. A hash code is created by a math function that takes digital information and generates a string of letters and numbers from it. Each block also contains a hash of the previous block in the chains to solidify the linkage and make sure the chain cannot be broken. So number four, the block is added to the blockchain. So the hash codes connect the blocks together in a specific order and they cannot be altered. So that is what the blockchain is. So what is, I don't know if I have time to cover the Bitcoin history, because I only have 2 minutes. So that is the first part of learning what is Forex, who trades Forex, when can I trade Forex, why should I trade Forex. So I'm going to, there's a link, if you want to learn more about this system, how to trade in Forex, I'm going to leave my link down to the episode information, and just click on those and I can get you into, plug into a system that will teach you how to trade in Forex and how understanding what goes along with it, with the Forex, blockchain, Bitcoin, how do you trade, what kind of trading platforms you should use, what is MT4 and all that stuff. This is regarding about markets, trading. So get a hold of me and I will provide that. And we can go together. I'm actually just learning all this stuff. And as I go along with this education, that's what I call it, hopefully that we can make money together. So once again, this is Frodo the Centrist learning about Forex in this complex world. So join us again next time. We'll talk about politics, health and nutrition, or one of these days we'll talk about religions. So I leave it up to you. And have a good day. I'm signing out.